Hey, welcome to the Monday, April 24th verifiable credentials for education task force. Today, I'd like to welcome Brooke, I'm sorry, I never actually said your last name. I'm sorry, Brooke Lipsitz. Am I saying that correctly? Brooke is, here from ASU, the Learning Network and Trusted Learning Network. So she's going to tell us about, the work that, they've been doing there. So, let me first though go through our proposed agenda and then we will, get going. We'll let Brooke take it from there. So, our first thing is about IP notes. If you've been on these calls before, you've heard this. So any contributions to, the specifications at W3C require membership and, full, IPR agreements to be signed. This is an open community call, so it's not required to attend these calls, but if you intend to do some more work, that is something that you should look into. Secondly, for call notes, let me put this here in the chat. So all of the minutes for these calls, an audio recording, and actually also a video recording if anybody requests it, are all take place for this whole call. And so note that we do that so that those who can't attend the call or even those who are here who want to reference it later have it available to them in a public setting. So we use Jitsi here on the left for our chat. I think some folks might use IRC, but primarily we use Jitsi here. And we use a queue system to have conversations. So if you like to cue yourself, you can either hit the hand signal in the bottom lower hand dashboard of Jitsi, or you could type Q plus to raise your hand or Q minus to raise your hand, just like I did in the chat. Okay. Why don't we start with introductions and reintroductions? Brooke, since you are new today, could I ask you to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. I'm Brooke Lipsitz. I'm the product manager of the Trusted Learner Network with ASU Enterprise Technology. I work closely with Kate Giovacchini, who I'm sure you've seen before in this space, and also partner with third-party developers and some of the people that are on the call in our architecture and advisory committee. So we have a lot of collaboration in the space, and without the help of key people and their insights, we probably would not be at the stage of development we're currently at. And happy to be here and show you the work that we've done over the last 10 months or so.
Awesome. Thank you, Brooke. Is there anybody else that's new to the call today or somebody who'd like to reintroduce themselves before we get going? When you see a Q minus in the chat, that is me checking to see if anybody is in the queue. Okay. Does anybody have any announcements or reminders that they'd like to tell the community about? If so, you can queue yourselves up right now to do that. Okay, I also do not have any announcements or reminders, although I could post this link here in case you want to know what is going on at the CCG. This is where announcements are typically made, and also in the mailing list. This week was, last week was the Internet Identity Workshop, and I suspect we'll start hearing some more about what happened there. And I'm excited to learn about that. Okay, then with that, why don't we start with our main topic? And Brooke, thank you for being here again today. I have the pleasure of working with Brooke and others on this call on the Architecture Advisory Committee, and I really have a soft spot in my heart for this project. I think they're doing some really great, interesting work and in thinking about verifiable credentials in a very different way, like from a network approach. And I think you'll find what they're doing really interesting. Brooke, why don't you take it from here? And then we can, when you're done, we can see if there are any questions. How about that?
Okay, great. Let me just figure out that I want to make sure I can share my screen. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to be running you through our lean TLN interface. I'm trying to do less and less slides the more I present, just because I noticed there tends to be a difference. So I figure I might as well just jump straight in. So we've just rounded out our phase one development for the TLN. So less than a year ago, we didn't have even the architecture in place. And that was something that we worked with our architecture advisors during our 2022 TLN on conference on. Some of the people on the call were actually a part of that meeting. So shout out to Stuart and Roger Davies as well. So we've really come a long way considering we had essentially nothing in place to then having a blueprint, developing an alpha tech stack, establishing governance, using certain events like Plugfest 2 to help guide some of our early design decisions and considerations. And now we're at this place too where we're also having another development company help us take into consideration institutional view and development. What I'm going to show you today is the learner view of the TLN. And again, this is still early development, so I'm sure much of this might change over time. But just to get to the crux of what we're doing, essentially. But all of this, even though we're using certain technologies and semantic standards, all this is really about simplifying access to namely course credentials, degree credentials that learners have earned throughout their career. Our angle into this with regard to credit mobility and fostering movement and reducing friction is that, you know, there's this firm belief that this is a lifelong journey. And the more we can do to remove barriers in the learner journey, the better it is for obviously the learner as well as the institution in facilitating this movement. It's not just a transcript fee that can hold students back, but even liens associated with an account. So we've been trying to envision other ways to essentially give learners access to the records that they've learned, ideally from a single source, to be able to share out and, again, ease that movement regardless of what their status is at a university financially, so to speak. Verifiable credentials are one way of working around that in the space. So that's a big part of why we've been talking with all of you throughout for different considerations. So where we're at today is we have a lean UI and a backend for this and for calls in particular to be made to the TLN. So we've just envisioned what it would look like for a learner to manage their credentials. And actually, based on some of what we've experienced, there's still some design considerations that we are taking into consideration for the beginning stages of this. Because when we initially set this up, it was designed to work with a wallet. So you'd come and bring your own wallet and that would be what you'd be utilizing for identification purposes. However, that's proven to have certain barriers in and of itself. And so what we're currently discussing is ways to make that easier, assuming that, you know, having to come with another identity or another set of credentials might be a barrier for a portion of the learners that would be using this platform. So again, there's always something in progress that we have to consider or pivot to make a change for. When we envision the TLN right now and seeing a learner coming to use the service, we expect it to be very simple. So this is a place that more often than not, you'll probably be guided to you by another application that needs verification of your records. And the idea would be a learner would be coming to the TLN to be able to access credentials from multiple institutions in one single place. In this particular view, I have two institutions. I have ASU and also, namely, Beta Community College, where I've earned credentials. In the particular use case example that I give, I talk about how I might want to take an internship in DC, and so there's relevant coursework that they need to see in order to ensure that I've met their eligibility criteria, namely that I've earned an associate's degree and that I have some relevant history classes to prove that I'm on that track, for example. So selecting credentials in the TLN, I don't have to share everything. I have the option to bundle my credentials for sharing or export them directly to a wallet. So if I created a bundle specifically for DC internship, I can do just that. And again, it gives me the ability to change how I share or who I share with, or I can even just delete the bundle that I have in place. So if in this case I want to add Gamma Tech University to institutions that I'm sharing this with, I can do that as well. The ideal would be to have multiple institutions participating in the TLN already available to the learner to help make this process easier. But that is something that we're brainstorming and figuring out how best to draw in various institutions for this purpose. So that's a big part of this as well, too. Learners would have the ability to change their consent at any point in time. So again, this is very learner-centric, learner-first that we're designing and developing for. And we also have accompanying services that we plan for constituents of the TLN to work with, namely another credit mobility tool that we have in place, which is Interactive Degree Planner. That's currently in development right now. But the idea is that a learner could share credentials that they've earned to various institutions to help them plan their future directory with regards to earning a degree. But this is all still early stages, so to speak. And that's the bulk of what I have to show off from a demo perspective. We have HiFi mockups that we're working on for our institutional development, but that development likely won't be ready until middle of June to be able to show off. So we're really excited about that as well. The demo itself of the TLN is fairly simplistic. Roger or Stuart, if there's anything that you would like to add based on the work you've done on the AAC to speak to some of this, by all means.
Sure. I think this is a really interesting and cool project, and obviously has a lot of good coming from it with the ability for the user to sort of be self-sovereign. I think the challenge that we're going to face is, adoption, getting people at the institutions to understand, how this is actually still, private until the user opens things up. And just, the ability to, run their own infrastructure versus having to contract someone to do it and how we get everyone interoperable. I think that's the big challenge going forward at this point.
And Phil, I saw your question about bundling. Bundling is another way of grouping credentials. So having the ability to pick and choose and then create a bundle, you know, or if in the case you're not using a wallet, to be able to export that grouping of credentials in this space. So essentially bundling could be thought of as creating unique comprehensive learner records that house a collection of records that you're sharing in a cluster, so to speak. I don't know if that helps explain the usage of the bundling feature or not, but also open to any feedback on that as well, too. As a VC, is that what you're asking, Phil?
No, as a verifiable presentation as opposed to a VC.
That's a great question.
I don't think that's been figured out yet.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
So is the intention that this will be a bundle that is sent via email from the platform? Or is this not clear yet?
That's not clear yet either. How do we send this to a third party if not through a wallet? So that's something we still need to consider as well, too.
Okay, thank you.
We know we can issue as VCs. We have that capacity. But, again, it is a good question as far as how are we exporting this into where, if it's outside of the TLN.
Brooke, I'm going to call on Nate Otto, who has a question about the universities.
Sure.
That are participating. Nate, you have the floor. Okay.
Thanks. It's exciting to see this application coming together. I had a question about the sharing to institutions screen that you briefly showed. I'm wondering how the institutions get placed into that list of options that someone could share to, and then what actually happens when you select to share to a particular institution.
So ideally, these are institutions that want to be a part of the TLN. They've been vetted. We've determined that they met some degree of issuance quality. There's been some vetting by the governing body. So this is still in pilot as well, too, is figuring out what that process looks like. As far as options for sharing, Learner would be able to just grant TLN access. In other words, any institution on the TLN could have access to their credentials. Also, Change specifically to have select institutions access their credentials. Like maybe if I am only interested in sharing between Arizona State and Beta Community College and Gamma Tech as opposed to UT Austin and Georgia Tech, I might want to manage those permissions differently, or being able to set them so they're private to me, then it's not discoverable to any institution in the TLN, except for the issuing institution, I should say. So that by default, if an institution has issued credits to you, then they do have access to the credentials they've issued to you, but they wouldn't be able to see other credentials on the network associated with you without your explicit permission.
So it sounds like it's a different user who is authenticated to the same domain who then gets to see the thing. Is there any transfer of data from one instance of an application to outside of the application to another one as part of this sharing feature?
There could be, yeah, through my services. And just the key would be notifying the learner that when you start to share outside of the TLN, that access could be persistent. So just being mindful of that, even with Interactive Degree Planner, for example, you know, once you're sharing outside of the network, bearing in mind there's less control over what you share. Because again, each application you share with is going to have their own terms of services on how they utilize their data. So I think the key for us is just making sure that we're very clear on to the learner or the end user, how their data could be used if we have a designated third-party application in place that they could share out to.
Cool. Thanks for the info. Just since I happen to have the mic, one more follow-up. Do you have any like API documentation or a description of what this connection to these other services entails?
That's a great question. I could follow up with my developer. I don't know that they have any explicit documentation, but that's something that we should probably be making available shortly for people to reference, especially if we plan to utilize other applications in the future. So it's something that we definitely need to have in place if we don't currently, but I'll check with my developer to see if we have anything on our GitHub, for example.
Great. Thank you, Nate. Mahesh from Pocket Courage, you have the floor.
Thank you. Very nice to see right here. I'm an alumnus of ASU, so I'm excited someday to maybe even retrieve my 30-year-old records through this method. So truly excited. It's wonderful. Just had a couple of questions. First one is, I presume this is conformant to Open Badges 3.0. Is that a correct statement in terms of standards as to your verifiable credential standards that you use?
Yes. Well, for PlugFest 2, we had to align to the Open Badge standard, but that is something that we want to commit to as well as to maintaining that. Data is still a big part of this that we're figuring out is how data is ingested and also shared, because not just Open Badge, but we also want to be able to export into other formats as well too. And so that's a big part of this. But yes, Open Badge is one of those formats that we plan to have criteria shared in that format.
Super. Another question kind of related is, how do you identify the subject today? You know, so this is kind of like you said, and, you know, it's not like, you know, the classic example that you see where somebody comes in with their wallet and they can give you a DID and so on and so forth. So you would have to identify the subject or the student here, right? How do you identify the subject within the verifiable credential in this format that you're doing right now?
So it's interesting that you say that because we actually had it set up to do that using a wallet and a DID. For the demo example that I have, I was using the Verus wallet specifically. However, just by using – and again, this Verus is great, so it's nothing on the Verus wallet. But the barriers in demoing, if something's going wrong with the Verus wallet, have all indicated that we need to have some other form of – identity management for a learner to access, because we don't want barriers to accessing your wallet to impact your access to the TLN. But at the same time, there's a difference of opinion on whether or not the TLN should be managing, you know, their own created accounts, for example, or something along those lines. So that's something we still have to reconcile. So as of this point, you can use a DID from a wallet to connect. And then beyond that, like when I validate different institutions or ASU, it's built into work with SSO. So if I were to reset this and wanted to connect to Arizona State University, it actually prompts me to enter in my ASU credentials because it's connecting and validating that way to be even pull up my Arizona State credentials. It's just really hard to show once it caches that information, unfortunately. So when connecting to various institutions, we're hoping to still utilize SSO and OIDC, but there is something that we still need to reconcile at the outset, which is what is the main source for someone connecting to the TLN, which we haven't fully reconciled, but we're leaning to the place of someone needs to have another way to connect beyond a wallet. And if so, what would that look like?
Yeah, and So that's to connect to TLN, but what about what's in the verifiable credential itself? So if I went in and say downloaded or exported my credential, what would it say in the subject field? Would it give my ASU ID or would it give my email or date of birth or name? I was curious how you kind of solve that problem, especially in the absence of a wallet, right?
Yeah. That's a great question, and I don't think we've gotten that far. We did just minimum viable criteria for PlugFest 2. And Carrie, can you speak to this? Were any of those criteria in the VC that we issued, or what were the four main criteria to issue as an open badge that we needed?
Right. For PlugFest 2, we did, had to be an open badge 3.0. And basically we were just using, decentralized identifiers for the identity to keep it pretty simple for PlugFest 2.
Sure.
So if we had connected with a wallet, we could have used that decentralized identifier in the VC. Okay.
Yeah. And you've used, Chappie too.
Yeah. That's true.
Yep.
Super.
Great.
Just a last thing. Is any of this work visible as open source, or do you plan to do it at some point in the future?
We're using all open source standards, but ideally at a certain point we would like to have it available, especially because we know to a degree institutions connecting with the TLN are going to need access to relevant materials to do that, especially if they're going to have different ways in which they need to manage their data or their networking configurations. So as of right now, I don't have anything publicly available, but again, that's just based on the stage that we're at since we're still in a prototype stage. But as we get further along, I'm confident that there will be portions of this that will be publicly available to review.
Thank you, Brooke.
Thank you.
Deb Everhart from Credential Engine, you have the floor.
Hi, thanks. Great to see this. Thank you. I think, your point earlier about adoption is always a challenge, but I think we can support adoption together in terms of the data structure. So if the data structure inside this system and also how the data is moving between systems is using CTDL, I think that will bring in different institutions and even state agencies that have a lot of data already in CTDL and make it more useful. And so that's just a comment. And then, so a question about the, adding up your credits and sharing them with other institutions. I assume that those are currently based on existing articulation agreements. So I'll let you comment on that, but also just point out that CTDL also provides a data structure for transfer values so that it can be not only those that are already known to the system, but that could be pulled in from other sources in CTDL.
Really great feedback, and I definitely appreciate that insight with regard to CTDL. Interestingly enough, this credit calculator feature, this was something that our developer generated, but it did pose a problem for us in that, institutions measure or determine credits differently. So this is probably not going to be a feasible service, but what he was trying to show off was how you could utilize a simple Lambda function within the TLN to do some of the work for you without having to take data outside of the TLN, meaning like that might be an option at a future date. Granted, from our perspective, that's probably not going to be how the TLN is going to function primarily, because we're not trying to supplant what any other dedicated service could be doing for the learner, and especially with more sophistication or taking into consideration articulation agreements, meaning like this is not the main purpose of the TLN. So I appreciate that call out, because this is something that we probably should update, because again, it's going to be confusing for people who know more in depth about that. What's more applicable is probably this interactive degree planner path. But again, that's really just focusing on sharing your credentials with the service like Interactive Degree Planner. So this is really just giving the ability to share with that service that is sophisticated to be able to do that, or has those articulation agreements, or has a stronger understanding of how FERPA works, for example. So if this piece threw you off, we're aware that this is probably not going to stay, but really good observation and call out for sure.
Well, certainly all three of these are valuable services, but also all very complex. So anything we can do to help normalize the data infrastructure for that, we're happy to be engaged. So just let us know.
Thank you so much, Deb. Really appreciate the feedback.
Awesome. Phil Barker, you have the floor.
Thank you. And apologies first to Brooke. I missed the first 10 or so minutes of the presentation, and I want to apologize if what I've got to say is completely off kilter, because I missed some important context. But I came in just as you were talking about sharing this data with other institutions, I believe, and you were then when you answered the other film's question about sharing a bundle of these achievements with other institutions or other people. I've been working with PESC, the Post-Secondary Education Standards Consortium, I believe it stands for, who have a standard for college transcript, sharing data from one institution to another, with the students' permission, but not so much with their involvement. And that's a very old standard. Its latest update was into XML, and they started a couple of years ago wanting to update it into JSON, and we've been discussing it over the last 2 years or so, and we got from JSON to JSON-LD, and we started drawing data models, and we've got something that's fairly standard that represents the data that's in their current transcript model and move things around, and verifiable credentials, or the structure that looks very much like verifiable credentials, kind of dropped out of that. So what we're looking at the moment is a transcript which is made of data structures that are similar to verifiable credentials, not necessarily with all of the full background and baggage that comes with verifiable credentials by way of the signing and wallets and so on and so forth, because that doesn't necessarily meet the use case that PESC are working to, and because PESC have got a home load of baggage of their own. But my question was for Brooke, whether that sort of work would be at all relevant to them, whether it sort of fits in with what you're doing, by using a sort of verifiable credential type structure at the heart of this, it would ease the lift for people wanting to implement it. So is that a valid assumption on our part?
I think anything that eases the lift is something that we're interested in. I know we've talked about PESC at a certain point as well, too. Roger, feel free to speak up specifically regarding this. I see your hand raised.
Yeah, so we've actually looked at PESC a little bit. One of the reasons we've looked at it is because so many of the institutional student information systems already have some mechanism to support PESC. So we thought, just like you identified, it would be an easy way, an easy format for institutions to generate transcript-like data into for us to consume. That work certainly hasn't been completed, but it is one of the things we have played around with a little bit.
Well, that's very interesting, because it does sound a little bit like you're maybe converging with the way that PESC itself is looking to go. In remodeling the transcript standard with something that looks like verifiable credentials at the beginning, and the transcript being something like a verifiable presentation, at least in terms of data structures.
Aspirationally, the goal is to make onboarding institutions and their data as streamlined as possible, and we're pursuing a lot of different avenues to try to make that easier, including some, AI tricks. There's more than one attempt being made, but PESC is certainly one of the things we've looked into, largely because a couple of the institutions who are participating very actively already have a way of generating PESC credentials.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil and Roger. Mariana from ASU Pocket, you have the floor.
Hello. Thank you. Hi, Brooke. Just realize that we work, you know, kind of in parallel, on the ASU enterprise technology side of things. And I was just curious, Brooke, to hear your thoughts on, CLR format, because you talk about bundling, that seems to be one of the use cases. And I know I get asked that a lot, of whether or not ASU Pocket will support OVV3 and CLR. And I know you already are supporting OVV3. So I wanted to ask about CLR and also about case standards. Have any thoughts there?
Yeah, ideally we would support CLR. Some of the logic was once we can guarantee that we're supporting Open Badge 3, that essentially paves the way for us to be compatible with CLR. But the trickiest part with the data is even just figuring out the best way to map even our own data, just how we utilize it. And Roger Davies can speak more to this too, just the goofy nature in which we package our own data for transcripts is unique. So it's not just a matter of using PeopleSoft language or Banner. It's, you know, anticipating how institutions are using, data themselves as well too. Like how much of a, how much heavy lifting are we going to have to do up front with institutions, to be able to ingest their data, for example. We're hoping that maybe there are some barriers we can break down at the outset, but we also want to make sure that institutions can bring their own data and that's not going to be a problem. But in and of itself, we have our own, as I'm sure you can relate to, Mariana, with data with Pocket as well, too. It's just, it's interesting how we are concatenating different fields, for example, and it looks like it's one particular record that we're pulling from, but it might be a few different ones, for example. So I hope that answered the first part of your question. Then the second, I'm sorry, Mariana, the second part of your question was?
Around case standards. And yeah, it answers. It's kind of similar to how we feel, but I do think that there is a benefit to eventually driving towards, just like we're talking about, normalizing all the data structures, kind of driving towards compatibility with that, because the registrar's office, the registrar's admin, ACRAO, has approved CLRs for kind of as a standard for sharing college transcripts. So it feels like an incentive to think in that direction. But yeah, the question was about the case standards.
You know, we should probably compare notes about it offline, because I'm sure, Mariana, your team is much more tapped in as far as what Michael Crow is recommending or anticipating. I don't know that we've gotten that far, to be quite honest. So that's something that we definitely should be considering. So happy to definitely talk with you more offline as well, too, based on what you've learned up until this point.
Sure. Sounds good. Yeah. And I'm just to be clear, I don't know for sure if that is being adopted at ASU at the moment. I just know that, like Tennessee Board of Regents and Alabama and a bunch of other places have actually started implementing that. So, you know, but yeah, let's chat.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be great. You know, and some of what we've built into this design is aspirational in and of itself. Like, we're using RDF and we're making some assumptions about RDF framework and its ability to intuit and infer, that we haven't really been able to test or prove out yet. So that will be interesting to see as we start to map to different, data schemas and seeing how the system starts to recognize new data, for example. But it is a big guess up until we can get to the point where we're actually testing it. But data is a big part of this and something that, you know, we're still trying to get our head around the actual scope for our next release cycle as far as what are our goals with regard to data, what is achievable, and what types of tools should we be using to help us with this process.
Yeah, for sure.
That's great. Thank you. Phil Long, you have the floor.
Thanks. I just, in listening to the conversation, it seems like it's probably useful to take a step back and think through, or at least discuss, whether the data structures that you're talking about are for the purposes of internal processing and manipulation of the data within the network versus external communication. And if it's for external communication, whether it's to, somebody or organization that has a secure pipe that you can connect to versus someone that may not have that, like an individual, alumni or student, where the only other mechanism that you have for somebody like that is to provide the security through the API that you're using to talk to them with. So a lot of this seems like you could parse this problem up a bit and then apply the appropriate methods that are optimized for each of those three sort of use cases. And in that regard, the form of the data for transport can be any number of things, even in the VC world, and wrapped by a VC as, and then transported by a secure protocol like JAPI or VC API or OIDC for V4, whatever is the most appropriate for the audience you're talking about. Whereas point-to-point communications with other institutions is just a whole other thing, which is where PASC and many of the organizations of that sort have been focused in the past. So I just think it would be helpful to parse this a little bit and then think about the subsets of approaches to those that might be useful to you in those contexts. Thanks.
Phil, thank you so much. That's very well put and thoughtful, and definitely something that we need to take into consideration. So I really appreciate your feedback on that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Deb, you have the floor.
Yeah. So thanks, Phil. That's a great tee up. And just, you know, one practical use of the data is for the metadata that can be shared and have that be in C2DL. So I think a really practical use case would be that when these credentials are going to be issued to people for use in a wallet and go outside the system, that those credentials, whatever form they take, can use an alignment to link to data that's in C2DL in the registry so that there is meaning beyond what is actually limited amount of data that's in the credential package itself. So this is a pretty straightforward use case that has immediate value in terms of making the credentials that are issued to people easier to understand.
Deb, how complex is that to set up with CTDL?
Not at all. So okay. Like when you showed that list of courses and credentials, those are in some sort of structured data because they're structured in your system. So either from the source or from TLN, you could take the basic, even it doesn't even have to be a lot of fields of data, but you can even just put that in a spreadsheet. It doesn't require an API integration to publish it to the registry. And then when you issue a credential for any one of those courses or credentials to include in the alignment a link to that data in the registry. So when you first set that up, the data that the data that's in the registry might be slim, but then you can add to it over time. So you could have, for example, very valuable thing is to add the competencies to those credentials and courses. And then it can grow over time to include transfer value pathways, whatever, but you don't need to get into those more complex use cases to just provide a connection between the credential that's being issued and additional metadata. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
We're happy to help with that. And I put a link in the chat to a very short overview document on that topic that's applicable for any digital credentials.
Yeah, thank you, Deb. Really appreciate it.
There's a ton of potential here. So I'm just really happy to see what are some of the practical ways to enrich it from the very beginning. So
definitely appreciate, and we're open to input across the board too, especially because we're still so early in our development. So any ideas or any thoughts anyone wants to share, even after the call, I'm happy to learn more about. So thank you.
That's great. Thank you, everybody. Does anybody have any other questions or feedback or comments they'd like to give Brooke before we close today? Okay. Brooke, thank you so much for presenting this work. I know folks have been curious about what's been going on, and it's great to see it, and for everybody else to see it too. So thank you for being here today and walking us through it all and you know, being open to all the feedback and suggestions. It's great.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you. Everybody, thank you very much for being here. I think next week we have an open agenda, so we will bring your topics, bring your questions. Also, if you are ever interested in presenting your project and the work you're doing, just reach out and we'll be happy to get you in the calendar. Okay. Thank you, everyone. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.